Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winning.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
Hello and welcome to this first off-season edition of the Next Fan Up podcast. I'm Pod Vader, as always, joined by a couple of super fans, and I have some other super fans that will be joining in and out of the Thursday podcast. This will be sort of what we'll do on Thursdays. We'll sort of look at the news. Maybe we'll have an interview or two, but we're definitely this week going to focus a lot on an article that I wrote, one of my first ever sports blogs. If you haven't read it, it's all about making the Browns great again for the first time. And you're going to want to check that out at nextfanup.wordpress.com. But let's check out who we have for our super fans this week. And I'm bringing in our Eagle super fan, James. Hello, James.
Hey, Pod. It's the off season. The good news is everybody's undefeated. The bad news is everybody doesn't have the same chance to win.
Very true. And as always, from Prison Zone 6 in New York, it is our Dallas Cowboys superfan, Kevin. Hello, Kevin.
Hello, Pod. Hello, James. Hello, everyone. Glad to be back. I missed you guys last week. Looking forward to a productive offseason.
Yeah, I kind of needed to have a week and a half or so to sort of come down off of cloud nine a little bit, although I'm still kind of there.
I'm about to say, have you really come down yet?
No, I don't think I have. And honestly, I still haven't bought my Super Bowl apparel yet. I don't know what I'm waiting for.
Well, maybe you can get Brady's jersey off of Twitter.
Yeah, you know, that might be something I could afford.
Did you guys see in an Atlanta area zoo named Hissing Cockroach Tom Brady?
Yeah, that's not in the spirit. That's not in the spirit of a real... of a real bet. You know what I'm saying? Like when Tim shows up dressed like Matt Ryan in women's underclothing, that's going to be a fantastic moment for this podcast. But the fact that the Atlanta Zoo names a hissing cockroach after Tom Brady, after making a bet with a Massachusetts zoo to name a baby animal after the starting quarterback of the opposing team. I mean, they would not have named a hissing cockroach after Matt Ryan in Massachusetts. They would have named a baby monkey after Matt Ryan. You know, they would have named a baby tiger after Matt Ryan. Yeah.
After that Harambe incident earlier this year, I can't believe the dudes are taking things so lightly these days. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my goodness. We now have a Harambe
in New Orleans.
My son will be so happy. Hey, we want to hear from you. NextFanUp@gmail.com is our email address. You can tweet us at NFU Podcast. And of course, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher or TuneIn Radio. And of course, remember, you can always tell Alexa, play the Next Fan Up Podcast, and she'll play the latest episode for you right there on your Amazon device. All right. Hey. I keep mentioning this article I wrote. Why don't we talk about it? And let's bring in some of our other super fans to help us have the chat. Earlier this week, I posted a blog post on making the Browns great again, for the first time. And yes, it is a little bit of a trollism because I know that the Browns were great at one time. And I actually copped to it in the article. So if you haven't read the article, go check out our website, www.nextfanup.wordpress.com, and click on our blog posts and you'll see it. I've been posting it for the past few days on my Twitter account at The Real Pod Vader. We've posted it from our at NFU Podcast Twitter account. Plenty of places where you can find said article. It's on our Facebook page. It's everywhere. We've spread it out. We've sent it along. And so I bring in our Browns superfan, Ben, to talk a little bit about my plans for the Cleveland Browns. How are you, Ben?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, I was hoping I'd get a little bit more fan reaction to the blog post, but it appears everybody wants to wait and hear what I have to say to sort of defend what I did. Now, the first thing, a lot of these things I've copped to directly in the article. One, I'm using Madden 17, a video game that's designed for entertainment purposes only. And so the simulation is not exactly what I would call professional. So that is definitely part of the issue. And then, of course, the other issue, and I copped this too, was that Madden 17 would not allow me to trade a first rounder this year and any other combination of picks to get Jimmy Garoppolo to the Browns. I had to trade both of the Browns first round picks. I cop. That is way too expensive. I'm not suggesting that the Browns go ahead and do something like that. However, I sort of couch it too. At the same time, knowing the results of what is going to happen as the simulation was played out and written in the article, giving up my two first rounders this year to get a starting caliber quarterback who ends up in the top 15 of quarterbacks and brings my team just so close to the playoffs, finishes plus six games, and I still have all of my draft picks for the rest of this year and for next year, including that first pick in the second round, I'm not so sure that's not a bad idea.
Pod, first of all, you're kind of pulling up my heartstrings here with the almost playoff. That sounds like the most Brownsian outcome I've ever heard of. and when I think about the two first-round draft picks for Jimmy Garoppolo, and there's a tight end involved there too, right?
Yeah, Martellus Bennett. We end up the thesis is the combination of Garoppolo and Bennett is going to help make the Browns phenomenal.
Yes, and so when I think about that, and on paper, and I've actually been kind of battling it out with some of the other super fans here talking about this, and I think it really comes down to how do you value Jimmy Garoppolo. And, you know, granted, he doesn't have a ton of tape on him, but when you look at, like, past quarterback trades, and I look at Carson Wentz, I look at RG3, and those types of deals, like, you know, which would I have any more confidence in any of those quarterbacks? What I'm saying is basically two first-round picks for a quarterback that you believe in, that you believe can be a franchise guy. I mean, you're talking about changing the culture, shifting the winds of the franchise into relevance. And so when you start thinking about those kind of things, like two first-round draft picks for a quarterback actually doesn't seem that bad. I mean, you know, I'm just weird playing revisionist history, but, like, if I could go back in time and give up 50 first-round draft picks for Tom Brady in his third year, I would do it. If I could give two first-round draft picks today for Marcus Mariota or Jameis Winston, or Derek Carr, and I would do it like in a heartbeat. That's not crazy. And that just shows like how valuable the quarterback position is and like why it is essential for a team. Like, if you want to compete, you have to have one, or, you know, or to compete for Super Bowls. Like, yes, you can go the Texans route, but, you know, is that sustainable? Is that long-term success? It's a lot harder to win football games that way because you have to consistently win on every single draft pick, win on every single free agent, you know, things of that nature. And again, also, when I also look at the first round draft pick, if I could give up Justin Gilbert and Johnny Manziel for Jimmy Garoppolo, I would do it. if I could give up Brandon Weed, Trent Richardson for Jimmy Garoppolo, I would do it. And so the value of the first round picks really just comes down to how good are you with the assets in your hand? You know, this Browns front office, like, granted, it's new, it's different. So, you know, it still remains to be seen. But just because you have a first-round draft pick, it doesn't mean that it's the end-all, be-all. Like, look at Myles Garrett. Like, that's who I want the Browns to take if we keep that pick. And I think we should. But if we get that, if Myles Garrett comes in and he's Aaron Donald or J.J. Watt, like, those teams aren't in the – like, you know what I mean? That's not the same impact that a top echelon sort of quarterback would have. And so when I started thinking about, like, oh, that's too much to give up for a starting quarterback, I think it's kind of nonsense. You know, would I rather have J.J. Watt or would I rather have Aaron Rodgers? Like, it's a no-brainer. And so when it comes to that, it really depends on, like, how do you value Jimmy Garoppolo? What do you think? If you believe in him and you think he can be a franchise quarterback, then you have to do what it takes to get it if the Patriots are willing to play ball.
I want to be perfectly clear, too. Despite what Julian Edelman will have you believe, that Jimmy Garoppolo is the next Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre, I look at Jimmy Garoppolo as being, I definitely think Jimmy Garoppolo is a top 15 quarterback in the NFL, which puts him right in the middle. I don't think he's going to be superb, but I also don't think he's below that. And I looked at, because I will be talking with Neil, our Washington Redskins superfan, a little bit later about Kirk Cousins, who also deserves a spot in this conversation about improving the quarterback position for the Browns. But as I look at the stats from last year and looking at both QBR and quarterback rating, granted, again, both of these stats are not necessarily the end-all be-all, I think Garoppolo would have finished right around the 15th spot. And as I look at the from 10 to 15, it's Marcus Mariota, Ben Roethlisberger, Ryan Tannehill, and I really wish Andrew was here so we could further examine that. And this is in this is a quarterback rating. Matthew Stafford's 13, Russell Wilson's 14, Andy Dalton's 15. And then you're looking at Alex Smith, Colin Kaepernick, Tyrod Taylor, Philip Rivers, Carson Palmer. Garoppolo is definitely within those five. That's quarterback rating. When you look at QBR, 11 to 15 is Alex Smith, Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Philip Rivers, Russell Wilson. I think Garoppolo is right there with Mariota and Winston. At 16 through 20 is Derek Carr, Sam Bradford, Carson Palmer, Joe Flacco, Andy Dalton. He's definitely within that group. So, so you're looking at a quarterback who can arguably be placed between 10 and 20. In the NFL. I think he's definitely better than Trevor Siemian, Brock Osweiler, Colin Kaepernick. Ryan Tannehill is 24th in QBR.
Josh McCown, RG3. Yeah. So
well, and that's the other thing. No Cleveland quarterback finished in the top 30 in quarterback rating or in QBR. So you're immediately improving that position by light years just with Jimmy Garoppolo. Again, you mentioned, would I rather have Aaron Rodgers or J.J. Watt? That's fine. I guess really the question is, would you rather have J.J. Watt or Sam Bradford?
That one's tough. Bradford hasn't shown an ability to stay healthy until recently. I've seen him be successful. I've also seen him, be not so successful. So I think that's very difficult. It really just comes down to value and potential of Jimmy Garoppolo. Now, I can play devil's advocate and say, okay, this is his first starting, his first two games starting. He comes in, he has a great command in the offense. I've watched a lot of his preseason, and like in the preseason, I'm seeing making pre-snap adjustments. In reading defense, and he has a very fast release, Pro Football Focus that he was like the second or the third fastest release in the league, and that's valuable. You can't discount the time that he's had to kind of like learn from the best franchise in football, the best coach in football in a very long time, and all that. And also, when you tack on the fact that when he came out of college, he was a highly rated prospect. He fell a little bit for various reasons, one of which was, school and the draft class. But, like, all those things kind of add up. And then when I've also been reading about people who I respect in the industry who are doing, like, deep dives on him, they've all said, like, he's very impressive. And so basically what you're doing is you're making an assertion, like, okay, what do I think he can be? At this point, if you were to go back in time, everyone thought Sam Bradford was, like, the end-all be-all. He did not get there for various reasons. But I mean, he was still like a number one overall pick for a reason, and so so you have to like take all those things into account. And so you're taking a bunch of unknowns and saying where do I think he can be? If the Browns look at him and they say I think he can be Sam Bradford, then there's really no point in even talking to the Patriots about trading for him because it doesn't do anything for the franchise. So I would only even talk to the Patriots about trading for him if I really believed in him.
The other sort of unwritten note about my blog post is the fact that I make 8 big free agency signings for the Cleveland Browns in this year. Mm. And I think some of the improvements at the other positions with those free agents probably lend a lot more to that 7-9 finish. And one of the things I did write was the injury to Christian Kirksey in the simulation in 2017, certainly stalled the push for the playoffs. James, let me ask you, as you're a team that obviously traded up for a quarterback, you traded away Sam Bradford. What are your thoughts here? There's clearly no Carson Wentz. I shouldn't say clearly, but the popular opinion is there is no Carson Wentz in this year's NFL draft.
No, but I still would rank Deshaun Watson as more than competent to take a team day one and start wherever he's drafted. Mainly because of the level of competition he played for 2 years in a row in the championship games against Alabama, who by all intents and purposes, by every college analyst, has like anywhere between 8 to 11 starters on that defense every single year. And he was clearly the best player on the field in both years of the championship game against Alabama, despite, you know, losing last year and pulling out the miracle victory, you know, this year. He is a polished quarterback now. I know the knock against him is going to be turning the ball over, but his talent at wide receiver was limited because of the return of Williams, who's also going into the draft and working him back into the fold. And, you know, he'll be, you know, fine going forward. But after Deshaun Watson, I don't see much as far as quarterback prospects. Watson's pretty much one, and then there's like a large gap to number two. So I'm not going to say, there's no Carson Wentz or anything, but if you want a quarterback and you can get Deshaun Watson, I say take him. Do what you can to build around him if he fits your scheme. You know, I don't want to see anybody taking him and trying to force a round pick into a square hole. But that's just my input right there. As far as, you know, Wentz goes, it was a great move for us last year based on things the Eagles wanted to do swiftly, and that was the best move to be done at the time.
By the way, Carson Wentz, 25th in QBR on the season and 25th in quarterback rating and 26th in QBR. And we sort of see what the impact was there for the Eagles, even at that level. Now, Kevin, our Cowboys super fan, you have a quarterback that could possibly be brought into all of this in Tony Romo. And we just saw a tweet right before we started the broadcast that Romo expects that he's going to be released and not traded. So what are your thoughts here on making the Browns great again?
First things first, it was a well-constructed article, so kudos to you, Pod. It was very nicely done, and it brings me back to my days of trying to assemble some dynasties in Madden as well. So great job on that. But going back to the Jimmy Garoppolo thing, like I understand Ben's feelings on it and how he's willing to give up 2 first-round picks for a quarterback that could essentially be the best, that would be the best prospect in this draft, and that would, I guess, be the best option for the Browns day one than any other rookie quarterback. And if Jimmy Garoppolo did pan out, then it would obviously be a good trade. But the question that I want to know is, everyone knows when you haven't eaten in a while, when you're starving, everything tastes good. So the Browns obviously haven't had a quarterback in a while. Just the thought of Jimmy Garoppolo and his short sustained success last year, it's like, oh, that tastes amazing. It looks good. But then the next day or so, when you've actually had a few meals in your system, you're like, oh wow, this is just average. It's not even that good. And so I'm afraid that's what the Browns are doing with Jimmy Garoppolo. And on the other hand, it might not be fair to say that about Jimmy Garoppolo, because he only has 94 career attempts. So I might be judging him harshly. He might be the real deal. I don't know. I personally think it's too soon to tell. And I don't think it's worth the gamble to trade for him. Because much like James, I think Deshaun Watson would be an excellent pick for the Browns at 12. Definitely not at number one. I think they have to go Myles Garrett there. But Deshaun Watson, much like now the other Cowboys quarterback in Dak, I think he has a lot of similar traits to Dak. He seems very calm and composed at all times, great leadership qualities. And all NFL front office, GMs, they all preach how much they love that. But when push comes to shove, if he's 5'10", 5'11", and Deshaun Watson's not any of those things, but they always nitpick and they always bump the leadership qualities down and say, oh, but his hands are too small. Oh, but he's the offense. So when push comes to shove, I don't feel that general managers and front offices actually think that way, that, oh, the leadership quality, blah, blah, blah. They only actually end up saying that when the pick turns out in their favor and they want to compliment themselves. It's like, oh, we did such great research. We knew he was a good kid coming out of the draft. So I really think Deshaun Watson is the man at number 12. Like James said, though, he does have turnover problems, but I think that's something that can be not easily fixed, but something that can be definitely fixed when he's not in school and his full-time profession is now as an NFL quarterback.
Come on.
No, I'm serious. I'm dead serious.
I hear what he's saying.
But, like, so, I mean, obviously he's a little bit raw. I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo is a little bit raw, too. 94 career pass attempts. We don't know what he has or anything. I mean, Bill, we don't know what Bill Belichick has turned him into. I mean, just like it would just make me so nervous to have him go from the best organization in the last 20 years to the worst and just expect him to have the same level of play that he had in those 3.5 games that he had in 2016. That just won't happen. And if the Browns think it's going to happen that way, then they're crazy and they're dumb and they shouldn't. It's just absolutely ridiculous to think that Jimmy Garoppolo will have the same success in the 3.5 games last year over a 16-game season next year with the Browns.
So I'd like to ask you, though, what about Deshaun Watson then? So, like, you've seen Jimmy Garoppolo in the NFL perform, and he was also a highly touted prospect coming out. So what about – so when I watch Deshaun Watson, what I see is a guy with an arm that is not to an NFL standard. He does not have a big arm. He does not have a big frame. He has accuracy issues. He has turnover issues. And he has ability to read a defense issue. So I understand that, like, he lit up a couple SEC defenses and won a national championship and had a great college career. But there's nothing about what I see as Deshaun Watson that makes me think, oh, he's going to be a top-end quarterback. Or, you know, it's not an easy assertion. Like, I think he's just as risky, and in my opinion, more risky than, like, a Jimmy Garoppolo.
I mean, I understand your concern about Deshaun. He definitely has some flaws to him. But I'm reading in a scouting report right now. I mean, his accuracy issues, I guess, are a little concerning. I mean, the accuracy is
that's one thing that's consistently, when a quarterback isn't accurate in college, they're not accurate in the pros. That's just something that is consistently.
That's not necessarily true because.
Yeah, that's not necessarily true. I'm reading in his draft profile right now. He throws with good accuracy on the move. And it says that his accuracy, like you just said, is a little scattered, inconsistent. But what I'm reading now is they think that with some slight mechanical issues, they are very, very correctable. I mean, and that's what I was trying to say. Like, not that I'm not making fun of college coaches, but, like, I don't necessarily think quarterbacks are really that developed in college. Like, Deshaun Watson, obviously, he was obviously the best athlete at all times in pretty much every game he's ever played in college. So, like, Dabo Sweeney didn't really need to make him better because he was already the best player on the field. So, like, what he did was getting the job done for Dabo, and they won a national championship. They almost won it 2 years ago. So, like, Dabo was like, all right, I'm good with this. He can do whatever he wants pretty much. So, when he gets to the NFL, now he's actually going to learn the quarterback position. And saying that right now, I mean, I guess that would make me nervous, Ben, like, oh, he hasn't learned the quarterback position yet. I mean, he has, but, like, I mean, there's still 2.5 months of the draft and a lot will be uncovered between then. But I just think that he has the body for it. He's definitely a little skinny and lean, but, I mean, he can obviously bulk up. He's got the mobility. And mobility definitely helps the learning curve on quarterbacks. He's not going to be just a pocket taking just statue in the pocket taking hits after hit after hit. He can get away. So that will help the learning curve, definitely. So that's definitely a positive about him. And I just like Deshaun. He just dominated Alabama 2 years in a row. He reminds me of Dak. He really does. He just looks at all times. He looks like he has the situation under control. We can go on all afternoon about his inadequacies, but like Tom Brady, he was a sixth round pick. He was, if we were talking about him like right now in 2002 or whenever he was drafted, 99, whatever, we'd be like, the guy ran a 5.3. Why is he even trying to be in the NFL? So like, like it's just
actually,
a little too
let me
early
throw in another point here real quick. Another quarterback we just saw recently in the NFL also didn't have a good scouting report. That was Matt Ryan coming out of Boston College. You know, the scouting report on him was not very favorable. I think at best they said he was going to be adequate and serviceable until you found
a decent replacement. He was still a top 10 pick, though. Wait, though. Matt Ryan was still a first-rounder.
He was a first-rounder. He wasn't a top 10 pick, no. But trust me, there were some serious knocks on him because they didn't beat a winning program when he was there at Boston College. And his touchdown-interception ratio in school was not that great either. I mean, he didn't turn heads coming out. And now, granted, the situation Atlanta was in, they took, you know, Matt Ryan because he was the best quarterback on the board when they did pick him. But, I mean, his career has blossomed. I mean, he's basically improved every single season. And living here in Atlanta, I'm not a Falcons fan, and I've never been a Matt Ryan fan, but I can give credit where credit is due. There were several knocks on him coming out of school, and every year in that league, he's gotten better, especially when he's had consistency as far as the offensive play caller. And look at the last few years under Kyle Shanahan, the Super Bowl notwithstanding, he's been phenomenal. You know, last year, even though they went 8-8, towards the end of the year, they hit their stride. He got a role in the offense, and in his past season, what he did as far as winning the MVP is he had complete command of the offense. Touchdowns went up to career highs. Interceptions were at a career low. So, I mean, we never really know who's going to be what as far as quarterbacks coming out in the draft. You know, we can nitpick as far as, you know, height, hand size, and, you know, touchdown interception ratio. He didn't do this well in college, but, you know, on the pro level, things are completely different.
By the way, Matt Ryan was the number 3 pick in 2008.
Just so you know. Excuse me, number 3 pick. Sorry.
So he came after. Interestingly enough, he came after the Long brothers, Jake going to Miami and Chris going to the Rams, who played for the Patriots in that awesome Super Bowl 51. Yeah. Joe Flacco, the other that was the second quarterback off the board in that draft, he was taken at number 18. That was in 2008. But that's sort of what we're talking about here. None of the experts right now think that whether it's Deshaun Watson or Mahomes or Kaiser or any of the quarterback prospects in this year's draft are going to be anywhere near Matt Ryan or Joe Flacco even for that. And that's sort of where I base where you have to rank Garoppolo in terms of the Cleveland Browns. Anyway, the ding you heard a little bit earlier was Ben had to leave. So unfortunately I wasn't able to give him the last word, but I do want to sort of examine a little bit more about these free agent quarterbacks that are available. And Kirk Cousins, not a free agent yet, likely going to get the franchise tag. I'm going to talk to Neil about Kirk Cousins in just a minute, but since you're here, Kevin, I do want to talk a little bit about Tony Romo because you are Tony Romo's biggest supporter. And if Tony Romo is released, you have to imagine the Browns and the 49ers, and I'm certain any of the other teams that need a quarterback are going to be jumping all over that. And it's too bad I can't ask Neil about this, but if the Redskins were to trade Cousins away and then pick up Tony Romo, that would be an interesting maneuver as well.
Oh boy, that would be terrible, wouldn't it?
Oh wow.
No, I actually read that right before hopping onto the call as well about Romo and Washington relationship somehow forming. And honestly, it was nauseating. I didn't even read the rest of the paragraph that I started about it because it was so disgusting to think about. But, I mean, I don't think really anyone knows what's going on with Romo. I mean, we do know that he does expect now to be released instead of traded. And I always thought that was really going to be the case because no one really wants to trade for him because, I mean, no one really liked him while he was playing and being productive. So no one's going to want to trade for him while he's constantly hurt and been on the bench for a year now. And really, what were we going to get for him? A fourth or fifth round pick? No one was going to give us any more than that.
His salary number is also too high.
Yeah, it's ridiculously high. But if he does get released, I mean, I would be mourning for a few days. But, I mean, the mourning's pretty much over. I've already accepted the fact he's no longer a Cowboy. But I really don't want him to go to the Browns or the 49ers. I don't want him to be in a situation like that. And I think Jerry Jones and Tony Romo, they're pretty good friends. I think Jerry, even if he does release him, he knows Tony doesn't want to go to a crappy team. So I think Jerry he's already on the line talking to some people probably to get the environment, the vibe, what's going around the league, who's interested in Romo. I know Jerry had Romo's best interest at heart. But, I mean, I don't really think anyone knows where he's going to go. So I think at this point, unless we're Adam Schefter or Ian Rappaport, we shouldn't really be speculating because they get paid to make up information and we don't. So, but Romo, oh, God, if he goes to Washington, I will be very, very sad. But more on that, Kirk Cousins, I think the Redskins would be absolutely foolish to let him go. I mean, yeah, he's going to be expensive if they franchise tag him this year. He's going to want a long-term deal eventually. But, like, Kirk Cousins, I'm a fan of him, as everyone knows. I've expressed that several times throughout the year. Like, I'm looking at his numbers this year and last year. Let's see.
They're solid.
They're more than solid. In 2015, he pretty much 70% completion. Last year, it's 67%. Both years, almost 8%. This year, actually, above 8 yards per attempt. Last year, almost 8 yards per attempt. So, like, he's – between this year and last year, I mean, he has, like, a 100 quarterback rating. I mean, like, that in the NFL will get the job done. And especially with DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon's futures not looking bright in Washington, they're probably not going to be there. Vernon Davis probably not going to be there either. Which obviously, like, if you think about it very briefly, is not that big of a deal. But Jordan Reed, we know he's not going to play 16 games next year. So the Washington, if they do let go of Cousins, who is this new quarterback going to throw to? Josh Doctson, we don't know what he is. Jamison Crowder is a nice player and all, but he's not a number one receiver. He's a good player to have on a team. He's a competent, more than competent player, but he can't be your number one receiver. And when Jordan Reed gets hurt, he can't be your best option at receiver to throw to. So I would have the Redskins. I think it would be absolutely crazy for the Redskins to trade Cousins or do whatever to him besides keeping him on the team because it's impossible to find a quarterback in the NFL. Truly, it really is impossible.
Let's find out. We'll take a pause there. We'll put a bookmark in that thought. And let's find out from Neil. What his thoughts here on Kirk Cousins and the Washington Redskins. All right, if we're going to talk about Kirk Cousins, then we better get the opinion of the guy who knows Kirk Cousins the best, and that is our Washington Redskins superfan, Neil. Hello, Neil.
Hey, Jay, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, as we talked a little bit about my plan to make the Browns great again, you know, one of the things I didn't even approach was, you know, Kirk Cousins is also a quarterback that could possibly be available. There is an article out there, Daniel Jeremiah, who's interviewed a couple of NFL executives, noting that if they needed a quarterback, if they were in the shop for a quarterback, that perhaps Kirk Cousins is the best possible option available right now. So what are your thoughts now with Kirk Cousins? Should he be franchised again? What are your hopes for Kirk Cousins and your team?
You know, Jay, I've been going back and forwards on this one for pretty much an entire year, wondering what they're going to do with Cousins since they hit him with a non-exclusive tag this time last season. he's just had another season where, yeah, he threw for what, near 4,900 yards. He broke his own franchise record, I should add. We also saw Kirk play at times really, really well. I mean, really top level well, and at times not so well. I mean, everybody will remember, of course, his last game against the Giants, where he didn't play. He didn't play badly, but he didn't play well enough. The one thing that a lot of Washington fans would point to with Kirk Cousins is the fact that he's playing with a terrible defense, and he's carried that team and carried that defense in many games where he's just put enough points on the board to get us victories. With a half decent defense, his record would be considerably better. So that kind of goes for him. Is he going to get the tag? I think it's this time of the season where Washington and Cousins camp are sort of doing a bit of a quick step or a tango as they dance around this whole franchise tag business and this aim to get a deal. Do I want him to get a long term deal, or do I want 2 first round picks if somebody trades for him and or up to 2 first round picks if somebody comes for him with a non exclusive franchise tag? I'm not sure, Jay. We know in this league that there's just not enough quarterbacks to go round. We know that. And from that point of view, you say, yeah, get him a long-term deal. But on the other hand, how much better are we going to be with Cousins? Are we going to be a team that can challenge for a championship? And that, I guess, is the question that the front office are looking at. And when you talk about Washington's front office, you have to bear in mind that there's also problems there in the front office. Bruce Allen doesn't like Scott McLuhan. Scott McLuhan doesn't like Jay Gruden. Jay Gruden likes Kirk Cousins. And who knows what Dan Snyder likes. So there's a lot of to-ing and fro-ing there. And I think probably issues to be washed, come out of the wash there too. It's probably hindering the Redskins' chance to get a long-term deal with Cousins early in this period of time. But really, if we franchise tag him, and I think we probably will franchise tag him, that will then give us time to, I think it's probably early July is the date for getting a full-time, a long-term deal with a player. So that gives us time for that. So yes, I think we'll franchise him. Which tag will he get, Jay? Well, I think he'll probably get the non-exclusive tag again. That does allow other teams to come in and see if they can make a deal with Cousins and with Washington. That would be probably the most sensible one. I have a feeling that Scott McLuhan would probably favour trading Cousins and not giving him the $24 million this year. That's what I think. I mean, Scott hasn't been on the phone recently, so I can't confirm that for definite. but I think that's the indications from him. Cousins, I think, you know something, Jay? I don't think Cousins really minds one way or the other. He's one of these guys who he's like he's won the lottery, and he's like, well, I don't really care, you know. Do what you like. Give me the $24 million or don't. I'll go and sign with somebody else for $24 million. And I think out there in the open market, Cousins would be he'd be snapped up pretty quick by the teams you mentioned. You know, the 49ers or your new beloved Browns, possibly even Chicago. So Cousins is in a great position, but that position is probably only for this year. And I always think of Andrew Brandt in these times, Jay, where he always says, you know, players want to get married. They don't want to be the girlfriend. And I think Cousins is going to find himself possibly as the girlfriend, certainly for the next couple of months. But maybe at some point all parties sit down and say, yeah, okay, let's get a deal done. And I don't know, what would Cousins get in the open market? $21 million, $20 million a season. He's probably worth about that. He's probably not worth the $24 million in the franchise tag. But well, at the end of the day, it's your quarterback.
I got to tell you, Neil, I'm looking at total QBR. Kirk Cousins ranks 6th in the NFL. Quarterback rating, he ranks 7th in the NFL. So he is pushing on the top 5. He's definitely a top 10 quarterback at this point. I think he could be worth that $24 million. I guess the question would be if the Redskins decide that it is too rich for their blood, are they really comfortable with Colt McCoy or Nate Sudfeld? as the option? Because if you look at what the other options are, now you're talking about Garoppolo to the Redskins. You got to give up basically what you just got for Cousins. While you'll have to pay Garoppolo less, is that really what you want to do? My guess would be no.
No, I don't think Garoppolo is in the picture for Washington. What would they do? I think there are some people in the organization, and I've certainly read that in places from beat reporters, saying that the front office think they could get just as much production out of Colt McCoy as they could Cousins. I'm not a believer in that one, but I have heard that. Sudfield, he's not ready. He's not ready to play yet. He was barely ready to play in the preseason last season. And there's no real chatter about him being anywhere close to starting. And of course, we know the draft this year is full of inconsistent players who have good traits, but also as many bad traits as they have good traits at this point. So I don't see a starter there. My great fear, Jay, and I'm going to say his name, even though I probably shouldn't, he's probably one of those he should not be named players, but Jay Cutler is somebody who's always been in Daniel Snyder's radar, and I could see the scenario where they maybe pick him up if he gets released for a year or two until they get a young quarterback ready, and I would not be very pleased with that at all, to be honest.
Well, I mean, and not to go further in too deep into remaking the Washington Redskins at this point, but you're also looking at your wide receiver position maybe thinning out this offseason too.
Yeah, we are, but I also think we're well covered in wide receiver. People say, oh, gosh, you can't lose Jackson. You can't lose Garcon. But I think Doxon will be fine when he gets back, our first-round pick from next year, who suffered with an Achilles injury throughout the season, missed almost all the season. But when he was in training camp and healthy, he looked a real deal. We'll see how he is in real action, of course. We also have Jamison Crowder, who I'm very pleased with in the slot position. We've got some good tight ends. And the two young receivers we have, Ryan Grant and Maurice Harris. Especially Harris. I like him. And I think Washington will be fine, to be honest, at wide receiver. The one good thing about Gruden's offense, one of the good things of Gruden's offense, is that he does spread the ball around to a lot of targets. And I would see that continuing. I think we'll re-sign Davis at tight end. Fingers crossed we get a season from Jordan Reed at injury-free. That would be great because he's our best receiver on our team. So I don't really have huge concerns about Garcon and Jackson. I would like Jackson back, because I think he still has that difference-making speed. And there's certainly, if you look at stats where Jackson misses games, then Cousins is not quite the player he is when Jackson is in the lineup. So, yeah, problems at wide receiver. Please don't go trying and redoing Washington's world, because we will be great pretty soon, so there's no need for that.
I'm not too worried about the Washington Redskins, although I can't promise that I'm not going to do a Make the 49ers Great Again featuring a trade for Kirk Cousins.
He's the Shanahan is the guy that everybody's pinning the trade option to, and I can see that, but I think Shanahan will know he's got 6 years down in San Francisco, and he'll be looking for a young quarterback in the draft that more suits the style he wants to play.
Well, we will see, and we'll see if I actually pull off another blog post, because that other one took quite some time to put together. Probably time than I wish.
It was very good, Jay. It was a great read. Everybody should read that. The one thing, just to sum up for in terms of Washington, I would say what we'll see is that at some point in the next couple of weeks, the deadline's what, March for the franchise tags?
March 1,
yeah. So by March 1, I don't think a long-term deal will be done by then. He'll be franchised with a non-exclusive franchise tag, and then they'll have that chance to either cut a deal with another team, or else, more likely, sit down and get a long-term deal together and stop all this "do you like me now" and "how do you like that" nonsense.
And by the way, if they do end up franchising him, I do think it would behoove a team like the 49ers to go ahead and try and sign him to a deal that the Redskins may or may not be able to match. I think I don't necessarily think that that's out of the plans either for a quarterback needy team, especially teams like the Browns and the 49ers that have the cap space to pull that off.
That's terrific, Jane. I think since you've got Behoove into this podcast, we're surely done.
Thanks, Neil.
Cheers.
There goes Neil. So, James, you heard it. Neil's biggest fear is that they're going to end up trading away Kirk Cousins only to acquire Jay Cutler. That would definitely probably be a death knell. And unlike what Kevin was saying before we talked with Neil, Neil does like the wide receiver depth that they have. I mean, he would like to see DeSean Jackson come back. But, you know, your team is linked to both DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon.
Yeah, the Eagles are actually linked to a lot of free agent wide receivers, so we're going to open up on the market here pretty soon. But just to go back quickly to the nightmare scenario, because that's what it would be if Jay Cutler was the Washington quarterback. That I would truly fly to London and give Neil a hug personally if that situation happened. I can't see any, aside from Washington, I can't see any team wholeheartedly going after Jay Cutler. Based on just overall performance in the league thus far in the last couple of years in Chicago have been abysmal at best and horrendous at worst. As far as Washington and Kirk Cousins go, the short version, like we've all said, what are they going to do as far as free agency? Because while the free agency crop of, you know, quarterbacks who are expected to hit the market is enticing, they're not going to do better than Kirk Cousins right now. And unfortunately, they have to give him the money. They have to find a way to keep him. And as far as the wide receivers goes, I was reading an article a couple of weeks ago on ESPN that said even if DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon leave, the next three wide receivers on the depth chart are more than capable, and Gruden is more than happy to go in the next season with those three as his top three receiving threats. They will need another tight end if they don't resign Vernon Davis because, as said earlier, Reed is not going to play all 16 games. He will get hurt at some point.
Well, all of this quarterback is definitely intriguing, but Andy, our Dolphin superfan, has joined us, and I want to talk to Andy a little bit about some of the moves that the Dolphins are making. I want to definitely get into some of the other big-name cuts that have happened over the last week, but right now, Andy, the Dolphins reportedly will be cutting Brandon Albert. They also cut defensive tackle Earl Mitchell, Mario Williams, and Ifo Ikpre Alamalu, I think I said his name right, also on the chopping block for Miami. What's going on with the Dolphins right now?
The Dolphins are trimming the fat, the proverbial fat around the roster. Speaking of trimming fat, if you hear external noise, it's because I'm on the treadmill, because I'm always hashtag improving myself. So that's kind of what this noise is all about. Now, as far as Brandon Albert is concerned, I wholeheartedly disagree with the move. Brandon Albert's cap hold this year was about to be $8.7 million. For an above-average left tackle, which at age 33 is what he still is, that's just fine, even if he just plays 12 or 13 games because he can't stay healthy. I don't agree with that move one bit. Mario Williams, no-brainer. The guy contributed absolutely nothing last year and makes a lot of money. He has attitude problems. He doesn't hustle. So that wasn't surprising either. Earl Mitchell is definitely an interesting one because you look at Earl Mitchell as a player, he's not really that good. But at the same time, Sue loves playing next to him. And I think this more than anything is a signal that maybe Ndamukong Suh doesn't have the, you know, the pull, the political pull within the organization that, you know, people perhaps at one point thought he did. So that's kind of where I stand on everything. Albert is by far the biggest move. Don't really agree with it, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, the offensive line has been a problem for the Dolphins for so many years. It seemed like last year that they finally sort of were okay. To make a cut to that offensive line seems to be counterproductive. I mean, by cutting all these guys on defense, I just don't see where the improvement comes. And you're a team that's hopefully looking to go up and not down in terms of the rebuilding process here.
Exactly. And I think the alarming thing more than anything else is really that, you know, despite the fact that his numbers look better, despite the fact that Adam Gase is a quarterback whisperer, which he is, he's not allegedly a quarterback whisperer, he is a quarterback whisperer. The fact of the matter is, Ryan Tannehill is still a very, 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 very average starting quarterback. And if you're protecting Ryan Tannehill with anything short of the Great Wall of China, he's going to hold on to the ball too long and get strip sacked. That's just who he is. It's just what he does. At this point, we have over five seasons worth, over 70 starts worth of a sample size to make that conclusion. And yeah, Brandon Albert played well last year when he was healthy. I understand he was only healthy for 11 out of 16 games. But again, at $8.7 million, when you're almost 50 mil under the cap, you'll take that. So I just don't get it at all.
By the way, we talked a little bit about Ryan Tannehill while you weren't here. He ranks 24th in QBR. Interesting, his quarterback rating puts him at number 12. And we were talking about him in comparison to Garoppolo. I think Garoppolo is right in that Tannehill area, if not, well, definitely better than Tannehill. Sorry.
Well, I mean, that's very possible. I'm not ready to say Garoppolo is better than Tannehill just because, I mean, the guy's thrown what? He's attempted like 130 professional passes, if even that. I mean, how could you possibly say he's better than Tannehill? Now, gun to my head, 18 months from now, could we easily be talking about him being much better than Tannehill? Of course. Of course. I mean, I saw the way he lit us up week two before we knocked him out of the game. You know, he definitely has a lot of promise. And just to kind of piggyback on the Kirk Cousins situation, I really echo what Kev said. The Redskins would have to be out of their gourd to do anything other than extend him. And 6 years, $125 million for Kirk Cousins is going to seem a lot less absurd 2 years from now when Jameis Winston, after throwing fewer than 100 touchdown passes in 4 years, gets an $160 million extension. So you can't look at these quarterback contracts in a historical bubble, because if you look at it that way, of course they're going to seem absurd. But it's a bubble that's not going to burst anytime soon, and the money's just going to get larger and larger and larger and larger. So what looks ridiculous today will not be ridiculous 2 years ago. And I think the Tannehill contract's a perfect example of that. People were laughing at the Dolphins. 6 years, $96 million, March 2015. Now, is Ryan Tannehill worth $16 million a year in a world where Bradford's making 21, in a world where Osweiler's making 18? Yeah, he probably is. So the Tannehill contract was a joke 2 years ago, and now it's a pretty good deal. And that's, I think whatever Kirk Cousins ends up signing with, whatever the numbers end up being, I think it'll be a pretty fair deal for the Redskins.
So Brandon Albert will join Kelvin Beachum and Ryan Clady as big name offensive linemen. And it's too bad Ben's still not here, because I'm sure he's got jerseys waiting for probably all three of those guys. Certainly guys that can help improve the team. I mean, Andy, where would you rank Albert with those other two? Would you put him at number one?
Yeah, I'd put Albert number one, Clady number two, and Beachum a very distant number three. I think peak Ryan Clady is better than peak Brandon Albert, but Brandon Albert's just so much more consistent. And even though both men are very injury prone, Brandon Albert's just much less. I mean, Clady, you know, when the Jets signed him at this time last year, everyone, the writing was on the wall. Everyone knew he wasn't going to play 16. Turns out he played only five. So, you know, Brandon Albert at least played twice that and played through injuries as well. So, you know, Brandon Albert's going to make some team really happy. I don't know who it's going to be, but whoever signs him, it's going to probably be a one-year prove-it deal for maybe $7 or $8 million, and he's going to play well. And let's hope that Tunsil can slide over. I mean, listen, when you draft a big kid like Tunsil 13th overall, you don't want him to play guard. That's not where you draft guards. So the idea was for Tunsil to slide over eventually. I just think it's happening 1 or 2 years too early. That's all.
I heard a in the background. Who said that?
I think that was me when he said Kelvin Beachum was a distant third.
What are your thoughts, Kevin?
I mean, I agree that Brandon Albert is most likely the top tackle out of those three. Kelvin Beachum, I mean, I'm pretty sure he also has injury problems. I mean, I think that, was this his first year on Jacksonville, or was this his second? I mean, I know.
I think it was the second.
I'm pretty sure his time in Pittsburgh, he had some injury problems. I think he even missed a game or two this year. So Kelvin Beachum, I don't even think he's all that good of a tackle. He was on the Jaguars for 1 year. So the Jaguars released him after 1 year. So that's not very promising. And much like Andy said, I think Ryan Clady and Brandon Albert are pretty similar. But Brandon Albert, funny to say this, but he's definitely less injury prone than Clady. I mean, in 2013,
and that's saying something.
Exactly. In 2013, Clady played two games. 2015, he didn't play any games. 2014, he miraculously played 16. And then this year, as Andy said, he played eight games. So he's most likely not even going to play 10 games for someone. So that's definitely why the Jets released him. And that's saying a lot, because now if you look at the Jets roster, the Jets literally don't have a left tackle right now behind Ryan Clady. So the Jets, as every day progresses, they just get worse and worse and worse, and it's hard to believe that they are getting worse. But I honestly don't know what the Jets are going to do in 2017. That situation is, oh, my God. I feel bad for all Jets fans. I know it's a little bit of a tangent
right now. I don't, because
they're
going to
win. But you don't, why? Because you're a Dolphins fan?
The kid from USC.
Oh, God, the Jets. Oh, my God. I'm excited for Christian Hackenberger. Hopefully he steps in and gets some sacks in, so I can be proven right about how horrible he is.
James, another big free agent that was cut from your division, the Giants parted ways with Victor Cruz. I mean, I'm guessing this is mostly a salary cap dump, but, you know, what are your thoughts there? Victor Cruz no longer on the Giants.
I'm not surprised. Based on what he signed after, you know, because the best way to say this is he pretty much, the early part of his career, almost nowhere in the same stratosphere, but pretty much on the same hype level, if you will, as Odell Beckham, as far as what we're watching now. And it garnered him a big deal, which is why he got that money. Unfortunately, the first year of that deal, he had that horrific knee injury in the Sunday night game against my Eagles. And he really hasn't been the same ever since. I know he missed an entire season and a half. And this past year, I don't know if he just couldn't get open or Eli wasn't looking for him or just purposely targeting Odell Beckham Jr., but his productivity just pretty much went straight to the tank. It was a move I probably saw coming because of the weapons that the Giants had offensively, especially at receiver. Especially with Sterling Shepard in the mix as well, the young rookie they drafted last year. I mean, the ideal was that between those three wide receivers, you have at least two of them have 1,000 yards and, you know, any other combination of the two of them with at least 10 touchdowns. And that's just not the way it panned out this year. I mean, everything was pretty much tunnel vision to Odell Beckham Jr. And in some games, Victor Cruz was an afterthought. So lack of production and his cap number pretty much – my thought process as far as the two contributing factors. Real quick, I want to piggyback to the Dolphins cuts here and Mario Williams. And just looking at his numbers, yeah, he was abysmal in Miami. But I'm looking at his numbers in Buffalo when Swartz was a defensive coordinator. And he had double-digit sack numbers for pretty much every year that Swartz was a coordinator. And, you know, of course, took the, you know, the rock hard dip when the Ryan brothers, you know, got there, or, you know, Rex anyway. Probably looking forward to just saying, keep your eyes out. There might be a reunion in Philadelphia. He fits the prototypical defensive end scheme, you know, position that Swartz wants in his defense. And they definitely want somebody opposite of the rotation of Vinnie Curry and Brandon Graham, and Connor Barwin might be on his way out. So.
That would be interesting. By the way, Victor Cruz, I would say you probably want more out of your second receiver than 586 yards and one touchdown on the
year.
But he did have a pretty good game against your Eagles on December 22nd. Eight catches, 84 yards. Still didn't find the end zone.
No, he didn't.
All right. So that's it for the big name free agents, which sort of going backwards now, the franchise tag period has begun for teams. They have until March 1st to declare their franchise players. I don't think anyone has been officially tagged yet, but there are quite a number of big names We've already been talking about Kirk Cousins. He's most likely going to get the tag. If they don't tag him, that would be really stupid on their part just because of the value that they could perhaps get either by trading him or by, as I mentioned to Neil, another team actually making an offer for Kirk Cousins under the franchise tag protection. The Redskins just have to do it just for that manner. But there are some other names out there that should be interesting. I don't think either of your two teams have any big franchise tag guys involved. Correct me if I'm wrong here, James.
Actually, yes. Benny Logan is a possibility, but because he's going to be looking for Fletcher Cox type money, which we gave to Fletcher last year, and he's going to be looking for a similar contract. And it sucks that we might not be able to keep them both. Because we've already trimmed players, but not enough to warrant giving Benny Logan what he wants. And it's really going to sting so much if we do not resign Benny Logan. But hopefully the player and management can reach some middle ground on a comparable number to keep him there long term, because Logan and Cox actually feed off each other and they're both effective together.
How about in Dallas, Kevin?
I mean, I don't think the Cowboys are going to use the franchise tag this year. I think it's going to be a while until we see the Cowboys use a franchise tag. I mean, the earliest I see the Cowboys using a franchise tag that would make sense to me is at the end of the 2018 season, if they can't come to a long-term deal with Zach Martin. But other than that, like, the Cowboys don't really have anyone in the next 2 years who is worthy of getting the tag. I mean, the Cowboys haven't tagged anyone since Dez Bryant, and that was only as a placeholder before we got his long-term deal in. And before that, it was just Anthony Spencer in 2011-12. So the Cowboys haven't really franchised many players in recent years, and I don't think they're going to this year or in the years upcoming. But then when Dak Prescott gets if we somehow don't get a deal with him, or Malik Collins, our rookie D-tackle from last year, he would be a interesting franchise tag option when the time comes. But other than those people, Zach Martin in 2018 is the earliest I could see the Cowboys using a franchise tag.
On my team, there's a ton of free agents heading for free agency on the Patriots. Dante Hightower right now has got to be one of their biggest concerns and most likely going to get franchise tagged. Although Patriots don't like to give that big number to any player whose last name is not Brady. So it will be interesting to see what the Patriots do this offseason. I actually think the way that they have been plugging and playing different players since the trade of Jamie Collins to the Browns, with Kyle Van Noy, Alandon Roberts, who was drafted last year, so he had a rookie year, and a few other linebackers. I think actually, if the Patriots end up keeping Chris Long and let Dante Hightower go, one, it would probably be a mistake, but two, I would not be surprised by a move like that, where they're going to feature more plug-and-play type players rather than superstars at the linebacker position. It's not what I want to see, but it's a move that I would not be surprised to see. Speaking of Patriots, or at least a former Patriot, Chandler Jones is one of those guys that will most likely be franchised by the Cardinals. Who are some of the guys you might have your eye on who may or may not be franchised? And I'll start with you, Kevin.
I mean, the Cowboys don't really have much cap room to spend. So all these people that are going to be franchised or talks about being franchised, such as Chandler Jones, the Cowboys, they probably won't even make a push at them because they simply don't have the money for it. But if they did, honestly, Chandler Jones would be the perfect candidate, because I think he, along with Khalil Mack, and I'm forgetting someone else, but I think he and those two other people are the only people in the last 3 years to have double-digit sacks in all 3 years. I mean, that's obviously J.J. Watt would probably be on that list if he didn't get injured this year, but Chandler Jones is a solid, solid player. He's definitely what the Cowboys could use. I mean, other than that, JPP, I mean, come on over from the Giants, even with your four fingers. We would definitely take you. But once again, definitely won't be able to afford him. So really the Cowboys, even though Jerry Jones, whatever he said, he wants a extreme pass rusher. I forget what he, like the grand wizard pass rusher. I forget the exact term he used, some ridiculous term used by Jerry. But the Cowboys don't have the cap room to make such a signing. They didn't have it last year either, and that's why we our like big defensive end signing last year was Benson Mayoa off the Raiders, and we gave him like just a few million dollars. So the Cowboys aren't really going to be big spenders in free agency this year. It's sad because I would like us to make a splash, but we simply cannot afford it. So it really takes all the talk out of Chandler Jones and all those interesting guys.
James, I saw an article linking, everybody's linking any sort of named wide receiver to the Philadelphia Eagles. Alshon Jeffrey is one of those guys who could also possibly be franchised by the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, and I honestly don't see that happening with the Bears as far as Jeffrey getting the franchise tag. Honestly, I don't know what's going to happen with Chicago's offense at this point because, you know, it's not like we saw it much last year anyway, so why should I be any different going forward? As far as wide receivers hitting the open market, Jeffrey could get the franchise tag, but it's, you know, connection with the Eagles has also been Kenny Britt, Deshaun Jackson, and Kenny Stills, and pretty much any top-end speed receiver you can think of has been, you know, is going to be available this year, has been linked to my team. All options definitely worth exploring. Some other players outside, you know, Philadelphia that I'm looking at, not that we're going to get them, but just interesting situations around the league. Pittsburgh and Le'Veon Bell is an interesting situation as far as how that's going to play out. That's something I've been keeping my eye on a lot as well. Whether they can come to a number that would avoid him getting a tag. And there have been a lot of articles linking, not so much linking, but alluding to Adrian Peterson's contract playing a big factor into how Bell's number will be, you know, but you know how they'll reach a number that's, you know, in best interest of both him and the organization. So that's something that, interesting that I'm looking at as well.
Some of the other big names that I'm watching, Eric Berry, not necessarily for, you know, a possible destination to New England, just big names that I think will have an impact somewhere else. Eric Berry, clearly one of those guys with the Chiefs. The Chiefs have a couple of guys. Dontari Poe is also listed as a possible franchisee. Stephon Gilmore, I've seen some articles linking him to the Patriots in Buffalo. I don't necessarily want to see that, but with Logan Ryan pricing himself out of New England, the Patriots definitely need a second corner next to Malcolm Butler. And honestly, Malcolm Butler is a restricted free agent. So if the Patriots don't play things properly, if I'm another team, I might just steal the entire Patriots secondary just to make them worse. Melvin Ingram for the Chargers is another big name to be watching. Kawan Short from Carolina. A lot of people have their eyeballs on him. And Terrell Pryor, whom I actually mentioned in my Making the Browns Great Again article, another guy. Oh, and another corner, A.J. Bouye. Now, that one is a little bit more interesting just because he sort of came out of nowhere last year with the season that he had. I'm sure we all would
mouthing off at Steve Smith.
What's that?
Was he the one who was mouthing off to Steve Smith at the end of the game between Jacksonville and Baltimore, I want to say?
No, I think it was somebody else. Ramsey.
No, A.J. Bouye is on the Texans.
Sorry.
Yeah. So, A.J. Bouye, I think he's a name that's going to be watched just because he had such a big season last year, but he's only done it once. I'll be curious to see how teams treat him. All right, so a couple other minor notes to just hit here real quick. The Las Vegas Raiders of Oakland may not become a thing, although the Raiders president says they've got the money to keep them going to Las Vegas. one of their big investors has pulled out of the deal to bring the Raiders to Las Vegas, which is putting all of that in jeopardy. And what I still find interesting, and I'm still going to mention, Monty, is San Diego doesn't want to give things up. And now there's a new group in San Diego willing to build a new stadium on the site of where Qualcomm Stadium is. And they don't need a vote because they're willing to put their own money into it to build the stadium. Where were you to keep the San Diego Chargers? Like, this makes no sense to me.
What were the Chargers asking for? That's the other thing.
I just don't understand why this group steps up now that the Chargers have left. It doesn't make any sense. What's that, Kevin?
It's because the saying is, "What you don't miss something until it's gone." So the Chargers are like, "Oh crap, we really don't have football on any team right now. So let's get a new one right now." So that's why they're trying so hard, because they miss what they have and they finally realized it.
Yeah, I just. If they had stepped up before, they wouldn't be in this position where they needed to go attract another football team.
One thing I did forget about Melvin Ingram. You brought him up. I did read a few things about the Cowboys maybe being interested in him, because he will be cheaper than the aforementioned Chandler Jones and JPP. But once again, I just don't think the Cowboys will break the bank on Ingram. And I'm not even sure if I want him to. He has a slow start to his career. Solid last 2 years, but I don't even necessarily. I don't even really have an opinion on Melvin Ingram right now. But I guess if they sign him, I would force myself into saying it was a good signing, because he does have more sacks than pretty much anyone on our defensive line in their career. So we'll take what we can get, I guess.
The Seahawks end up only getting a warning for their injury report gate regarding. The Richard Sherman non-injury, or the injury that they never reported. There were reports that they were in peril of losing their second round draft pick. I guess I just want to say you're welcome, Seattle, because of all the bogusness that has happened around the Patriots. Apparently the NFL now sort of getting that, perhaps we shouldn't be so stupid in giving out these foolish punishments. That said, I really wish Seattle would have lost their second round pick Listen, if we're going to have our starting quarterback suspended for 4 games for science, if you don't report an injury on the injury report, then you should lose your second round pick. It makes perfect sense to me. Perfect sense.
But what about fudging the injury report the other way, always putting Tom Brady on it for like 6 years straight?
Listen, that rule,
6 years, like 15
that rule
years.
Was put into place last year, and the Patriots followed it to a T.
Really, he wasn't even hurt.
That's it for news. I just want to end on this note for you here, James, which I thought was which was kind of nice and apropos, considering your predecessor as the Eagles superfan was always big on that third aspect of the football game. The Philadelphia Eagles graded out as the number one team in special teams. The Chiefs placed third, scoring 30 points from special teams. The Patriots were sixth. In the article that I read, too, was interesting to note that the most teams that were in the Super Bowl were ranked in the top 11 in terms of special teams than in any other category. So there were more teams ranked in the top 11 for special teams than there were for ranked in total offense or total defense.
Nice.
Yeah, I think that's pushing it a little too far. Special teams is important.
Eventually, but no time soon. I'm fully aware of the process here.
Special teams is important, but is it that important? I don't know. Hey, that's going to do
it. Turns the tide of the game.
Well, it can, for sure. And if you're like the Chiefs and you can score 30 points strictly from special teams, then that is an important aspect of the game. In any case, that's going to do it for our show today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much for listening. If you haven't read my article, please do. It's my first, and I'd like to see a lot more eyeballs on that article. Nextfanup.wordpress.com to read about how I will make the Cleveland Browns great again for the first time. And if you have anything that you'd like to say to us, you can always reach us at NFU Podcast on Twitter, or you can write into us, nextfanup@gmail.com. That's our email address. We would love to hear and interact with you, especially during this time where we're literally going to be talking about the things that sports fans are talking about, especially NFL fans. It's the off season. It's all time for conjecture. Every team is going to have the greatest year ever. And this is the only time that everyone can be extremely happy. And then week one kicks off and the Cleveland Browns are in last place once again. So write us in. We want to hear from you. Nextfanup@gmail.com. Subscribe to the show on iTunes. Leave a review, if you will. It only helps our show get more earbuds listening to the show. So we would love for you to do that. Plus, you can check out the archive. Our guys before the Super Bowl did a off-season preview for every single team. They split it up AFC and NFC, so you can check that out. You can also check out my reunion with Matthew Berry, although there was a lot of Bachelor talk in that, which also might be dated at this point. I don't watch The Bachelor, so I have no idea. But apparently something crazy happened just recently on The Bachelor. So whatever. So all that good stuff. As always, until I decide otherwise, we're going to continue to end the show with Jeff Fisher. There you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.
Can we end the show with Romo's speech in week nine or whatever now instead of?
What's the quote? What's the best quote?
Right. There were so many quotables in that speech. Pick one.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, God, I have to go back and listen to it. I don't want to cry, though, today.